and welcome to Motorpod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 576 for the 13th of September 2018. And if you're wondering, hang on a minute, didn't we just have an episode 575? You were right. That was only yesterday when I was talking to Len about the MotoGP round from Misano, Italy. But while I was away swanning around in the glorious warm sunshine down in Italy, we had a British Superbike round, and not just any British Superbike round. We had the triple header from Silverstone to decide who would go through into the showdown for the remaining three rounds and seven races. Unfortunately, I wasn't there. I had to slum it in Italy, so we sent the only man we could, Mr. Dave Archibald Ferdinand Neil. Dave, how are you, sir?
Andrew, how are you? Welcome back from Misano, mate.
Thank you very much. Got the suntan, a little bit sore on the back of the legs, because Sunday especially, it was pretty hot.
But an experience nonetheless. I look forward to hearing your chat with Len to see how you got on and the fruits of your toils while you were out there. While I was down at Silverstone in my, well, it was nearly time to get the big coat out. Thankfully, being an almost northerner, it wasn't quite cold enough to get the big coat out, but Saturday was a little bit on the chilly side. Sunday was a little bit better. Certainly not the weather that you had down in the Adriatic coast of Italy.
But by and large, it was dry over the weekend?
Yeah, pretty much. Saturday, there's a little bit of a rain shower that, not enough to, it's certainly not MotoGP levels of rain that we'd had 3 weeks prior. But a little bit of a shower over Saturday lunchtime that did wet the track a little bit. Stock 1000 qualifying was wet. I think Q1 was wet, but it started to dry out in Q2 for Superbike. So it was all or nothing. It was just the timing of the little shower, and it soon cleared up. It wasn't too bad. But obviously, as we spoke last time on the show, there was talk of the national circuit being used for British Superbikes for their showdown round this last weekend. And that's what came to pass. Stuart Higgs and his team decided that was the best option for that weekend, ahead of the issues and problems that they'd had, that obviously much reported at MotoGP. And we said at the time when we spoke about it that it would be better for the crowd. It would be better because they would be coming past far more regular than two and a bit minutes. They're coming around in, for the superbikes, I think 54, 55 second laps, something like that. And the racing was fantastic.
Well, that's glad to hear, because there was definitely some, initially when they announced that, I know some of the riders were maybe sort of less than pleased. I think from a rider's standpoint, they look forward to taking on the full F1 circuit at Silverstone and really pitting themselves against some of those fast corners and fast changes of directions. But yeah, I took your point from what you said that, you know, with it being such a big fast track, you know, the spectators end up quite some ways away and spread out. So, you know, you lose the atmosphere. So it was really cool to hear. Not only, therefore, did you get that, you know, nice spectator attendance and atmosphere, everyone crowded in a smaller track, but it sounds like the racing, therefore the riders, probably came away satisfied from that too then.
Yeah, they did. And when the TV interviews and reading some of the reports afterwards, because Silver, a lot of people saying, well, you've got Knockhill and we've got Brands Indy, you can't compare this one to them only in terms of distance. Because Silverstone is such a wide track, the guys have far more room to move, to manoeuvre. The left turn at Beckett's, rather than heading straight on out through to, is it Chapel, then onto the hangar straight. It was literally the little bit of a left into Maggots, and then just as you get to Beckett's, they swung right to rejoin at the very end of the Wellington straight. So, yeah, that was a tricky little corner for them, but the rest of the circuit remained the same. So they had the Wellington Straight, Brooklands, Luffield and Woodcote and Copp. So they had still some fast turns around the circuit. And the one thing that became really obvious from free practice one was tyre wear. Now, the Silverstone circuit isn't particularly abrasive, but because of the number of laps and the amount of time spent on the right shoulder of the tyre, the only real left-hand turn is at Brooklands. The rest are all right-handers. There's a very, very slight left kink as you go into Beckett's, but mostly they were straight lining that. It's not enough to get onto the full shoulder, the full left shoulder of the tyres. So just that one left-hand turn put an awful lot of stress on the right-hand side of the tyres and across a lot of classes. Super Sport, Stock Thau, and British Superbikes. There was an awful lot of chunking going on. There was a couple of tyres that were delaminating during races. And it was quite a difficult weekend. A couple of punctures as well, which is unusual. Or flat tyres, punctures, whichever way that they happen, whatever happened to the deflating rears. Alistair Seely had one in the Supersport race. Jason O'Halloran had one in one of the Superbike races that we'll come to. So it was quite an attrition rate for the tyres themselves. We'll explain at the end, Pirelli have made a statement after the event to say that they'll look into it, which we'll have a look at when we go through all the racing. But overall, a fantastic weekend of racing. Three Superbike races that rank right up there with some of the best that we've seen. Genuinely that good.
So I guess the real focus of the weekend was the competition of those last one, two remaining spots in the showdown and those people in contention for it. So I'm trying to remember when I left, that were people like, I guess, Pete Hickman, who had just made it into six, if I remember him trying to keep his spot. I think that was Christian Iden was in there, and Michael Laverty was a possibility. So I guess the focus is on those guys.
Yeah, very much so, very much so. Leon Haslam was already locked in. Jake Dixon was already locked in. Irwin and Brooks were far enough ahead for it not to be, barring some race-denying injuries to both Irwin and Brooks. They were going to be firmly ensconced within the showdown top six. Bradley Ray, obviously on the back of his form from Cadwell Park, was almost a surefire entrant into the top six. So really, it was all about that sixth place for me. As we said last time out, we reckon those top five would stay where they were because of the points gap after Cadwell. It was between Hickman, Buchan, Iden, O'Halloran and Laverty. I can't remember if I said on the show or not, or whether it was prior to the weekend talking to friends. I didn't think the top six would change. And listening to what, when I returned home and caught the TV coverage yesterday, James Whittam said the same. It just, Hickman had that little bit extra ahead of Danny Buchan, Christian Iden, Jason O'Halloran, and Michael Laverty. So it had the potential to go wrong for Peter Hickman, but he was the one with the most to lose, with everybody else having something to gain. But again, with his top six ability, it shouldn't have been too much of a problem. But you expect, as Scoop Carter will always say, expect the unexpected in British Superbikes. And he certainly made it difficult for himself over the weekend, did Peter?
I have to fight my natural instinct for it, just to get you to tell me kind of, okay, so what was the result? What happened? So
No, let's go step by step, because there's a story to unfold.
Okay, so let's kind of go, exactly, let's go bit by bit and just tell me, you know, how the weekend unfolded, because I've been really good. I've genuinely stayed away from a lot of the BSB social media, everything, because I wanted to get the time to really understand, you know, how it unfolded.
Sure.
Because it was, yeah, I mean, it was exciting to get to the point where you are in the showdown with still people competing for those last remaining spots and not it being just already assured.
Yeah, this is how it works with the showdown, because you're looking at those last, that really effectively what was the last showdown place. So you had the five guys fighting for that, but also within the top... Within fairness, within the top two, within Haslam and Dixon, you're looking at podium credits becoming all the more important. Mm-hmm. And they've been important all season, but that doesn't tend to be the focus. That's the underlying story before we get to this round, where after this round, the top six all reset to 500 points, and then they add the podium credits on top of that for the guys that aren't familiar with the BSB showdown rules. You've 5 points for a win, 3 points for second place, and a point for third. Accrued through the season, in the top six, if you're in the top six, those podium credits then get added to your 500 points, and that's your league table to go through the final seven races of the season. With consistency, it is possible, and it has been done before, where you can get into the showdown and have no podium credits whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Because such is the nature of BSB and the sharing out of the podiums, you know, you could finish fourth, fifth, sixth all season on a consistent basis and drop into the showdown without a podium credit. So, you know, it does make for an interesting last seven races. This year, not quite. I can't say not quite as interesting because it is, because it still has the potential to go wrong. But the points gap at the end of the day, as we'll come to, makes things a little more certain. Certain's the wrong word, isn't it?
Likely, maybe.
That's a better word, thank you. There's a clear driving seat. But the weekend started off for Leon Haslam not the way that he wanted. Being ejected straight out the front door of his JG Speedfit Kawasaki in one of his biggest high sides that he's ever had.
Oh my God, really?
Oh yeah, it was huge. It was huge.
That's amazing. If you think about how long he's been riding and in all the different formats and formulas.
And the crashes that he's had some big ones as well, the old lad.
Oh my God, was he okay?
He was okay. He landed on his back, I think, which was... To be fair, with the Dainese suit that he wears, landing on his back was possibly the better way for him to finish his airborne trip than actually landing on his shoulder or his legs or his arms and damaging one of his limbs in that sense. Yeah, he had, I think he displaced a finger, overextended his ankle with his ligaments. But within reason, Andy, he should have really broken something with that because it was fast and it was huge. He tipped into Brooklands. Richard Cooper was on his outside. Because it was first practice, they only had CCTV footage that they have of some incidents on a Friday. And Richard Cooper kind of took his eye as he was turning back in into the left-hander at Brooklands. And I think that kind of unsettled Leon a little bit. And it just... The back end snapped so fast and pushed him straight out the front door. And then the onboard camera got kicked off. But the bike was sky ground, sky ground, sky ground. Leon, as I say, fortunately, was okay because he spent this season, unlike last season, uninjured.
Right,
he's had the most consistent season of any championship he's ever ridden in, and that is the fact that he's kept himself healthy. Last year, obviously, he'd there was one at Knock Hill, and then there was the incident at Brands Hatch, and you know he'd banged himself up pretty badly. But this year, he stayed injury free, touch wood.
And I think part of that is with him and the JG Speedfit Kawasaki as well. They have that performance combination where he can pick and choose when he really has to push.
I would agree. Yeah, he's very comfortable on that bike.
So I think for a lot of the event, he can ride sort of within a comfortable pace.
Sure.
Still quick, but still within a sort of degree of comfort, you know, that sort of 95, 98 sort of percent, and not have to push necessarily the boundaries. And, you know, if he has to, not every single lap. So, you know, already I think that's given him some degree of protection. So to hear him have this, and the biggest one of his career, my God. And
when you have really good friends in the paddock, you sort of go, oh, Leon. And you go, oh, Dave, you've got to rebuild it. Oh. You think somebody's going to be busy between FP1 and FP2, but
yeah,
they got him back out. Such as of any superbike crew of an elite BSB team, whether it's McCam, Yamaha, JG Speedfit, you know, all the way down the pit lane, to get the bikes rebuilt in the short amount of time that they do is nothing short of incredible.
Because that's worth bearing in mind. I know you often get used to GP and World Superbikes where they've just got a second bike sat there, but British Superbikes doesn't have that. And
one bike, you know, rule.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so they have assemblies, which are sort of large pieces which are pre-assembled with certain bits, but it still ultimately all has to come together, all has to be plugged in, all has to be, you know, fueled up, wetted up and 100%. Got working.
Yeah, you can't just roll a chassis out the back of the truck. It doesn't work like that. So, yeah, testament to Dave, to Simon and the guys at JG Speedfit for putting that bike back together in such a short space of time. They rescued three parts from Leon's bike. They rescued the tank, the engine, and the wiring loom.
Oh, dear.
And it turns out the wiring loom wasn't particularly great either. So literally, the tank and the engine, the rest of it was in a small pile at the back of the garage.
Oh, God. I'm going to go on eBay when we finish this to see if I can, see if I can get anything.
I saw one of the rims, and it's like, wow. There was some force went through that bike, and it's really good for Leon that he came out of it, in air quotes, relatively unscathed. But that was the tale of Friday, really. On to Saturday, when the real meat on the bones of the weekend start to begin. Qualifying practice, one of your challenges for the showdown, Danny Buchan, he didn't even make it out of Q1. For whatever reason, he was marooned in 23rd place for Q1, which was difficult. But that said, he was actually ahead of James Ellison, who couldn't break into the one-minute barrier, considering Bradley Ray was lapping in a 57. It was sort of wet for that first session. Mm-hmm. And I think it was the first wet session of the weekend. But with James's woes with trying to find grip on his Anvil Tag Yamaha is... It's a big struggle for him. But it was the usual suspects down in that didn't make it through Q1, at least. Tom Neave, who ran for the Honda BSB team at Thruxton and Cadwell Park, he was drafted into Martin Halsall's Mavuno.com Suzuki team.
He's like the man with a helmet.
He is, yeah. You, here, ride this. Because unfortunately, after Chrissy Rouse's injuries at Cadwell, he was on commentary duties alongside Fred Clark for the weekend on the circuit broadcast.
Oh, that would have been interesting, because I love it when they have riders on the commentary. They just absolutely add so much colour and insight.
Yeah, and Chrissy's an intelligent fellow anyway. He's a great guy, and luckily his Geordie accent isn't too strong, where people are sat at trackside sort of, what? What did he say? And, you know, he managed to temper his Newcastle accent really well, which would have been quite funny if he'd have, I think, really laced into the standard Geordie accent. But no, you're absolutely right. It was a great insight from Chrissy all weekend. I know he'd rather have been out there racing. I'm sure Colin Wright, his team boss, would have preferred him to be out there. But Tom Neave stepping in during the week, both Tom and Tim Neave, the Lincolnshire Farmers, their progress through the ranks over the last two or three months has been quite phenomenal. So it'd be nice to keep a track of their progress over the rest of the season and into next year. They certainly have an awful lot of talent, and they have some really good backing as well. So we'll keep an eye on them. Unfortunately, Tom didn't make it out of Q1. But then it started to dry. As you look through the qualifying times, we go down from sort of 57s, 58s in Q1, then we're down to 54s, 55s into Q2, and then we're down to 53 in Q3. So that was an indication there of how the track dried out pretty quickly, and shows it wasn't, you know, the downpour that we'd seen previously. It was literally just a typical British shower. Mm-hmm. For Q2... let's have a look. Who do we meet? Michael Laverty, 18th place. A difficult weekend. That was, as it will transpire, a difficult weekend for Michael Laverty. A returning Dan Linfoot in 16th place. Peter Hickman in 15th. So as far as qualifying goes for the showdown final place contenders, it was almost like after you, Claude. You know, I don't want it. No, do you want it? No, I don't want it. Peter Hickman in 15th, Christian Idden in 14th. But there's, a reason why he ended up in 14th place. Good for Gino Rea, 13th. And Sylvain Barrier actually showing well on the Smiths Racing BMW for 12th. Tommy Bridewell in 11th. And Andrew Irwin being the last one to be excluded from the qualifying. He sat there in 10th place. The two Tyco BMW guys in Q2, Michael Laverty's chain broke, which curtailed any progress for him in that. But unfortunately for Christian Idden, and this after, I think this basically usurped Leon Haslam's story from Friday, into the left-hander, again at Brooklands, the only left-hander on the circuit, The Christian Highside at his Tyco BMW landed on his collarbone and broke it in three places.
Oh, no. So I guess this is probably cold tyres as they transition onto the left after all that time on the right?
Yeah, I'm not sure at what lap it was on, but it's certainly on the transition. Yeah, certainly, as they flip-flop through it.
Yeah.
I have a story about that as well that I shall come to later. That I don't know if you might have picked up on it on social media, but we'll have that story for the full race day for the Sunday. Bearing in mind that it was a three race weekend as well, so the qualifying was early. The qualifying was like 12:15,
yeah.
And then race one was a couple of hours later. So this is all on Saturday. With Christian Eden, his collarbone in three places. The story came out that he was unfit to ride.
Well, duh. I broke my collarbone and I was basically unfit to sit up in bed for a week.
Hold that thought.
Okay. Oh, really?
Hold that thought. And then we went into Q3, which was dominated by Bradley Ray. He the first rider and only rider into the late 53s. He really has got his dander up after Suzuka and having his bike given back to him, so to speak. Jake Dixon in second, Glenn Irwin in third, Taran McKenzie. That name is going to crop up a few times over the next half an hour or so. Ahead of teammate Josh Brooks, a fairly, you know, battered and bruised Leon Haslam in sixth place, Luke Mossy in seventh, Bradley Ray's teammate Richard Cooper on the sister build base Suzuki in eighth place, and Jason O'Halloran on the Honda in ninth. Now, Christian Eden must have testicles the size of melons. Because with a collarbone broken in three places, he had to go through a medical test to prove that he was, in air quotes, fit to ride.
What?
This, the fitness test they use is reasonably comprehensive. It consists of push-ups.
Wait, hang on. So he's broken his collarbone in three places and
yes.
He turns up at the center or whatever, sort of going, oh, I'm here for my medical. What do I need to do? It's like he's not sort of going, oh, obviously that's it for the weekend. The doctors are saying I can't, like, cause he hasn't got it. He's not one of these things where he's like on a private jet to Barcelona, plated, and then sort of back again with a bionic collarbone.
Nope. There was nothing of that ilk whatsoever. It was a trip to the med center at Silverstone for the BSB, the fantastic BSB medics to check him over. And it was standard press-ups. It was a one-armed press-up on the broken side.
Oh, my God, that's insane.
And it's the best one. Because of the forces through the bike, they hold the broom handle and they have to push against, you know, as you think for counter steering on the motorcycle, yeah. You're pushing against the bars and it's not just holding yourself up under braking or holding on for acceleration. The forces, as you know, from your track days that you have to exert through a motorcycle, the opposite way to get the bike to turn, they hold the broom handle and they resist. You have to push away.
Yeah.
So to mimic the forces that you would put through the handlebars. So he went through that and he was declared fit to ride.
So is he allowed to bite down on a wooden spatula while doing this? Holy crap.
Christian Eden's pain threshold is one of the highest, I think, over the with the injuries that he's had. You know, he was on the TV doing the interviews and he's like, it doesn't feel too bad. Once I'm on the bike, it feels okay.
Oh, that's insane. I don't know what the pain meds are on. Because, like, I mean, I slammed into the side of a JCB from a bike, broke a collarbone, and it hurt. And it hurt a week later as well. You know. So he's then back in for the race. Unbelievable.
Yeah. He was back in for the race, and he completed the race.
That's amazing, because... I mean, at Misano, Paul was back after his accident well. And, you know, in the same vein as well, you know, he was there carrying an injury, had a little bit of time to recover, but, you know, he was out there wrestling with a MotoGP bike as well. These guys are just motivated and cut from a different cloth.
I think the whole paddock was in disbelief that he was able to do what he would do. You know, all kudos to Christian Eden for that. It I can't imagine, excuse me, the pain that he had, but he masked it well for the coverage on the TV. And when we saw him in hospitality and he was around the paddock, he had a slight, you know, very flimsy sling on. But other than that, yeah, he tip of the hat to Christian Eden for the ability to even consider riding.
And actually, talking about injured riders, you said Dan Linfoot was back. How's he feeling?
Rusty, I think.
Yeah.
Overall. Yeah,
but physically, okay.
Physically, I think he's a lot better, certainly.
The thing is, no one could complain after Eden, could they?
this is the thing,
isn't
it?
People sort of going, like, I'm sorry, what did you say? You had a bit of a bad knee? No, it's fine, actually. It's nothing. It's...
What do you do? You've cut your finger? Brilliant. Suck it up, buttercup. Crack on. And it does, when you follow motorcycle racing and as at the level that we all do and the listeners do, you know, the things that those guys do, and then you think, oh, God, a bit of backache today, and I'm feeling my age today, and you're like, really? You're not, are you?
Yeah.
In different levels of fitness and of pain thresholds. That overtook the Leon Haslam story pretty swiftly once that had happened. But as race one got underway that same afternoon, it was Bradley Ray that took the lead from pole position. Unfortunately, he then crashed on lap four.
Going into
the right hander at Beckett's. We were in the grandstand that basically overlooks Beckett. So as you sit on the very left hand edge of the grandstand, you can see them come down from turn one. You see them at Beckett's, and you see them disappear off up the Wellington Straight. So it's a reasonable place to sit, even though the wind was blowing into our faces and it looked like we'd been under a sun lamp by the end of the day. and as Bradley went down, he literally yanked the bike up by the handlebars, which takes some doing. With 175 kilos of motorcycle by the handle, not by the handlebar and the seat unit, as you're instructed to do if you drop your motorcycle. This is literally grab the handlebars like, huh, straight up, and he was away.
He'd rejoined.
Yeah. Now
you're not allowed to do that.
You're not allowed to do that in BSB. Absolutely right.
And hasn't he got past form for doing that? I'm sure there was another instance where he did that. I think it was a qualifying.
For qualifying, you can do. For qualifying...
Yeah, but you had to come back to it. He had to come back into the pits. And he didn't.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
That was it. Yeah, I remember. You just thought somebody would have sat down and sort of just elaborated. Okay, look, just to be clear, you know, if you go down qualifying, you need to come in the pits. If you go down and race, you can't.
Exactly.
So I guess that's an instant black flag for him.
Absolutely right. Because of the nature of the width of the circuit at Silverstone, where he crashed was he basically slid down the circuit because he lost on the entry to Beckett's where they turn right. So if you imagine the circuit actually carries on down to Church and then onto the Hanger Straight. So there was plenty of runoff. He'd already lost the front, picked the bike back up and went away. But because he was in the middle of the international circuit, the marshal's post is quite a distance away from that. So by the time he picked the bike up, got it going and knobbed off quicker than the Orange Army got to where he was. So the marshals couldn't put an arm on his shoulder and go, no, you can't go anywhere. He literally picked the bike up and went before they could manage to get there by literally a second or so.
You wonder though, like as a rider, you think you just take a cursory glance at a few of the rules?
It's racing, isn't it? And he's only young.
Yeah, and I guess he was probably so pissed at himself.
Yeah, and he's after that showdown spot as well.
Yeah.
So and first race, fourth lap in, and he's sliding down the track on his backside. Bless him. So you know his pace was there without a shadow of a doubt. But in just the impetuousness of youth, unfortunately got the better of him on that one, which in turn gifted the lead to Jake Dixon, who then lost out to Josh Brooks. But then for me, the man of the weekend started to come to the fore, Taran McKenzie.
Good to hear that Brooks was up there. So, I mean, they had terrible sort of form at the previous round. So I'm glad to see rediscovered the bike. Now, Darren had already demonstrated that he had the pace to stay with Brooks once they got the bike sorted. So to see both of them up there, that's exciting.
Sure. Yeah, he's been knocking on the door for a while. I mean, he qualified fourth, so he was on the pace all weekend. The guys had tested there, but obviously I think six of the corners were rendered irrelevant after that Stuart Higgs and his team had decided to run on the national circuit. But at least they'd been there and they knew basically what they needed for that part of the circuit. And also, Taran weighs next to nothing. He's a little fella. And the likes of Cadwell Park, Alton Park, he's a bit like a flea on a dog's back because they're quite nadgery circuits. It's difficult for him to muscle the bike around. He will get stronger as he gets older, but he's still a kid at the moment. But at the likes of places like Silverstone, he can really let the bike run and he can, you know, use it to his advantage, the power and the weight ratio. And I'm not belittling in any way his achievements over the weekend. He rode fantastically well. And he deserved all the plaudits that came his way across the weekend for sure. But, you know, he got the best of Josh Brooks after that. But then it was Haslam that was just creeping forward. Starting in sixth place, he just took his time. And exactly what you said before, he knew he had the pace in hand because he and the Kawasaki Ninja have gelled so well this year. And the JG Speedfit give him such a good bike and the tools to do the job, that he can methodically work his way through a race. Make no mistake, he had to fight for it. Make no mistake, it wasn't a walk in the park in any way, shape or form. But the bike gave him the tools to creep back to the front of the race. And it wasn't until really the last lap that Leon went underneath Glenn Irwin. Irwin was sort of, he'd already got the checkered flag in his eyes, but Leon just crept up and the inside, dropped it over his nose, and then just managed to hold on to the finish line. You know, they were separated by 0.171 of a second at the checkered flag, and then with McKenzie and Brooks, McKenzie got the better of Brooks, and you're like, hang on a minute, Josh Brooks needs those podium points. For even though it's only one podium point that he's missed out on, it would have been one point less to lose to Leon when it all changes at the end of the day. And Taran McKenzie taking his first British Superbike podium. And with him and Neil, it's the first father and son combo to take British Superbike podiums. So it was good for the family. It was great for Taran. Really difficult for Josh. He was spitting feathers after that. It was a very, very difficult thing for him to take, being beaten by his teammate, knowing that he's in the showdown. Taran effectively doesn't have anything to ride for other than pride.
Yeah.
You know, but he beat him, and he's a tenacious little bugger. He really didn't give up. And Taran McKenzie really came of age this weekend, and it's so, so good to see. Talented little rider.
It's great to see, but the thing is, from Brooks's standpoint, you know, when it comes down to it, it's hard to really say anything because, you know, the argument is, well, ride faster then. And if
correct.
And if you're saying,
yeah, absolutely that.
You know, he would have to say the thing that he cannot say, which is I couldn't ride faster or that he was better than me. And, you know, most riders will just can't say that in the same way that my wife can't say I'm wrong. They couldn't say they wouldn't be able to say that. And the thing is, too, is like if Taran was going to go into a sixth or a seventh or something like that, you know, maybe he would have sat back. But the potential of his first podium to a racer. Phew, give me a break.
Exactly that. It's exactly that phrase, a racer. Yeah,
exactly.
And he's not going to ride shotgun for Josh Brooks.
And how would he, you know, feel if he's rolling into the pit, sort of knowing that he held something back?
Yeah, shoulda, woulda, coulda.
No, he would have regretted that for the rest of his life.
He wouldn't have slept very well Saturday night, would he? I had it there. It was there. I could have had a podium and a trophy. So no, there was no way he was going to give that up. Jake Dixon, he finished fifth. A difficult race for Jake. When they interviewed him afterwards, he said that he had grip at the start of the race. The tyre went off and then it came back to him. Which, when I was listening to it, it's like, tyres don't do that. he felt he was riding on ice through the middle of the race. And as he was saying it, you know, when you listen to the rider interviews and you try and pick up on what they're actually trying to say rather than what they are saying. And even when it cut back to Witt and Shakey and Matt Roberts, even Witt had this really confused look on his face. And he thought the same. He's like, well, tyres don't do that. They either go really well and then drop off a cliff and stay there, or they degrade gradually and you can control it. But tyres don't give you grip, and then all of a sudden come back and give you grip again. So Jake looks in on the verge of tears.
I do sometimes wonder, though, you know, when riders blame the tyres, if that's just not this sort of easy whipping boy. They're trying to make the point that there's a mechanical issue, or like, you know, it wasn't the riding, it was something, but they don't necessarily want to sort of berate the team.
And this is what I was going to come to. It was like he was really struggling to find a reason for what it was. That's what it felt like, but obviously it didn't make an awful lot of sense. And he also looked on the verge of tears at that point. Oh. Yeah, he was really, because, you know, he lost out on podium points. You know, that's another 5 points that Leon took off him.
Yeah.
As you look at the bigger picture. So, you know, the pressure was on Jake. He has to take podium points off Leon.
Well, that's not going to help his mental game for race two, is it?
No, exactly that. And luckily they had, because it was the race on the Saturday, they had overnight to put their heads together with Glenn Richards, Lee Hardy and the crew, and his dad Darren Dixon, to be able to try and come up with some formula to fix the issues that he had. It probably wasn't necessarily the tyre, but that's what he felt had happened. He kind of come back that far because he put his best lap of the race in on lap two. If you want to see grip at the end of the race, look at Peter Hickman. He put his best lap of the race in on lap 28 of 30. So it was quite impressive from Pete. But as we take a rundown, Jason O'Halloran in sixth place, that's a sign of what might have been through the rest of the season had Imola not happened.
Yeah.
Jason would have been a serious showdown contender had Imola not happened, in my opinion. Little bit better for Luke Mossy in seventh place. Still not good enough, in my opinion, for the talent that he has. Peter Hickman in eighth place, better than his qualifying. Season best for Gino Rea in ninth place, his first top 10 on the OMG Racing Suzuki. Tommy Bridewell in 10th, Andy Irwin 11th, which, without his brother towing him around, that's where I kind of expected him to be, which is still very, very good in that BSB field. Dan Linfoot in 12th, Danny Buchan 13th, which almost sealed his fate for not making the showdown. Michael Laverty, a distant 14th, Christian Eden in 15th. James Ellison once again failed to complete a race. Just difficult, difficult times for the soon-to-be native Texan. And the Anvil Hire Tag Yamaha, it just doesn't seem to be working for him whatsoever. But that was the story of the race. So the racing was fantastic. It was cut and thrust all the way through, and really set the tone for Sunday, for what is traditionally, in inverted commas, the proper race day.
Well, and Stuart Higgs must have, by this point, had a bit of a smile on his face, thinking he's played a bit of a blinder.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt, and rightly so. A well-earned smug grin, if you like. He did right. And out of all the hoo-ha from mainly the riders prior to the event, it's disappointing we're not doing this. I really like that circuit, this, that, and the other. After the race, everybody was like, we really like this. Because it's not really racing if you go out and you win by 4 or 5 seconds. You know, a lot of the right, they like the cut and the thrust, don't they? It shows that's what racing's about. It's chopping and changing your lines and developing racecraft. The grid for the first race on Sunday was set by fastest lap. So it's Jake Dixon, Bradley Ray, Josh Brooks, Leon Haslam, Tara McKenzie, Glenn Irwin, Richard Cooper, Luke Mossy, and Jason O'Halloran rounding out row three.
Was there a general sense, though, that you could pass on the track, or was grid position everything?
No. I mean, Leon came from sixth in the first race. There's plenty of opportunities to pass. You pass into turn one. on the brakes is not an issue. Passing, there's an awful lot of passing going on into Beckett's and obviously into Brooklands, and then the switch back at Loughfield. There's an awful lot of action went on there as well because everybody was so tightly packed. There was always an opportunity. There were lunges galore. And especially in race two, there was a particular lunge that we'll come to. So, yeah, there was a bit of bumping and barging and, you know, Rubin's racing in the greater degree, but sometimes you can rub a little bit too hard.
Curious. Okay, carry on.
So, after the first race, Hickman had extended his lead over Danny Buchan to 12 points. Iden was 22 points off. So, you know, Peter was fairly well secured at that point in the showdown. Again, for race two on the Sunday afternoon, at this point, I'd already had a lap of the circuit.
You'd walked the circuit?
No.
Safety car?
No.
Hang on, was this the picture I saw you in your leather romper suit?
Yeah, I did a pillion lap on the Sunday.
Who took you around?
Paul Curran, the team manager of OMG Racing Suzuki, who Josh Elliott rides for, who the listeners know I do his race reports and a little bit of PR for. We were in the garage and they'd corralled a few people to do the pillion laps, and one or two had dropped out. So Paul's partner, Holly, came to me and went, "You're going on a pillion lap." So Jen gently pushes me forward, went, "Yes, you are, aren't you, Dave?" Because me, I'm far too polite. But, no, there's other people more deserving than me. I had no chance to say no. So it was off into the truck, get changed, and out onto the circuit for a lap on the back of a GSX R1000. My first ever pillion lap around any circuit in the UK. Fantastic.
Do you have like a handle on the tank or something that you can reach around to grab hold on? Or is it sort of like more like the love handles you're hanging on to?
No, it's almost, if you imagine a backwards letter B that's screwed into the tank. So you can reach round and your hands are at almost like a 45 degree angle.
It's good that you've got something firm because, you know, the hanging as you accelerate is one thing, but being able to push against something as you brake.
That was the key. The acceleration wasn't an issue. I was quite happy with that. But when Paul jumped on the brakes, you really had to lock your arms.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Because even it's a road going, it's a standard, fairly standard road going GSXR.
Obviously, they beefed up the rear suspension once they knew you were getting on.
Yeah. Well, they did, because there was a young lady on before me who obviously was maybe 8 stone something, and then big 13 stone Dave gets on the back. And it's like, okay, a couple more clicks on the back there just to help out. So much so that I was the second one round, and Paul, he overshot into Beckett's. He kind of forgot where the circuit went. And he's like, on the brakes.
I'm not saying you're fat.
I'm not saying you're fat, but I can't really turn this very well. But to get a sense of how much time they spend on the side of the tyre, that was the perfect example for it. And apart from the Wellington Straight, you're rarely upright. And it's such a long, long corner. Turn one is quite a long corner. Beckett's is almost two corners. It's a really strange. It's not a Beckett's was really weird because it's not quite a constant radius. It was almost almost a 90 degree, but then it cuts back a little bit again to get back onto the Wellington Straight. Caused all sorts of problems during all the races. So many different lines to go through it. But the Brooklands, is you're an awful long time on the side of the tyre there on that left-hand side before you flop to the right. And you seem to be an eternity on the right-hand side of the tyre, going through Loughfield 1, Loughfield 2, and then Woodcote. So you get an understanding of how much hammer those Pirelli tyres are getting on, you know, more powerful bike at a faster pace than we were going around. It was a massive thrill. It's the first time I've ever done anything like that. And
a real eye-opener.
Oh, yeah, it really was. Yeah, especially I wasn't expecting it. So, yeah, massive thanks to the OMG team for that. It was a very big surprise. And to be fair, just as a slight side note, we were very, very well looked after by the team over the weekend. And Emily made her debut as a brolly girl this weekend. So she brolled for Josh this weekend for both races. So she was over the moon. And again, not something that we expected. So a fantastic weekend for myself, for Jen, for Emily. It was quite the weekend that we weren't expecting. So just as a little side note, we do get some fortunate things sometimes. We're very blessed for what we do. Anyway, slight digression. Race two. As we said, Jake Dixon on pole from Bradley Ray, Josh Brooks, Haslam, McKenzie and Irwin on row two. Again, Brad Ray getting the launch. It seems that the Suzukis have quite possibly the best launch going. Josh got the whole shot in all three of his races, and Brad Ray got the whole shot in the two races for the BSB at that point. So something more than coincidence when the Suzukis can launch the way that they do. He was ahead of Dixon and Taylor McKenzie. McKenzie then went through to lead on lap six, again before Jake Dixon took over about mid-distance. So no issue with a lack of grip on the bike this time. A couple of times previously, Leon Haslam had run deep into Brooklands to change his line into Luffield to come up the inside. I'm trying to think who he sat up the first time. He kind of squeezed through on Taz McKenzie, which might have been in the first race, or it might have been earlier. Yeah, it was. He squeezed through on Taz McKenzie, just almost on the curbing. Taz had to sit up because he wasn't quite expecting him to be there. Leon had nailed this line through it all the time. Unlike Tommy Bridewell, who really cocked up that line in race one and punted Richard Cooper off, which meant a trip to the headmaster's office for Tommy Bridewell for that incident. Because he caused Cooper, and this is the important thing, he caused Cooper to crash out of the race. Now, Leon Haslam did the same move that he'd done on Taz McKenzie on Brad Ray. Brad didn't know he was there. Brad didn't see him, and they collided pretty hard on the entrance to Luffield 1. Leon, it's a robust move. There's no doubt about it. There was plenty of robust moves across all the races, but this one was caught in full view of the cameras, and it made Bradley sit up and lose places. So it cost Bradley time. Couple of laps later, race direction had reviewed it. Leon had the board came out of 91 minus one. So he was ordered to drop a place. By this time, he was sat in third place. By the time the board came out and he registered the board, he was leading the race. So there was some consternation of like, right, does he drop back to fourth? Because he was in third when the penalty was issued. Or does he drop back from first to second from where he is now when he's seen the penalty? Now, one of the things that came out of it was the penalty board is in completely the wrong place, where they're passing under the pit wall at 135, 140 miles an hour onto the front straight. They are not looking to their right to see where this board is. So a couple of laps passed, he clearly hadn't seen the board, not through ignorance, but because he's doing his job.
And there's nothing on his individual pit board?
There's nothing, no, there's no ship-to-shore radio as there is in MotoGP to say onto the Motec dashboard to drop back. It was relayed via his pit board. And as soon as he saw the pit board minus one, then he did. He stuck his leg out, cheekily as usual, and somewhat ironically after Cadwell Park, stuck his leg out. Jake went past and Taron McKenzie went past. Initially, when Leon waved them through, Jake was reticent to go through. It was strange. It's like Jake couldn't quite work out if Leon was playing games.
Well, he may have seen the same pit board as well and noticed that, you know, Leon's going to drop a single place.
Yeah, well, it depends if Jake had seen the pit board or not, or if he'd seen the board. I think he was taken by surprise by it, yeah. to the greater degree. And then eventually Jake went through, and then Taron thought, I'm having some of this as well. And he went through
yeah,
as well.
Sure.
So Leon, he ended up losing two places, which kind of negated the fact of having to move back to fourth place.
Mm-hmm.
So the penalty was served in that sense. And there was consternation on the race commentary, and the same for us in the crowd, because we could see it on the big screens. It's okay. the penalty was served, there was no issue. But there's only really a handful of laps left at that point. I think maybe three or four laps left. So Leon then had to work hard again to gain the ground he'd lost. But just as he tried to on the penultimate lap, Pete Hickman had an engine problem and unfortunately dropped oil on the circuit into Brooklands. And it wasn't an awful lot of oil, but both Jake Dixon and Taron McKenzie found it. And they crashed out on the final lap, which left Haslam to take the win from Brooks and Irwin. Now, yeah, not the way you want to end a race, and especially also for Pete, whose engine expired.
Yeah, he'd feel bad about that.
With a show, yeah, that's right, and it's costing podium places.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, Dixon and McKenzie, it could have been the penultimate lap. And basically, so Leon, that's the double already for the weekend. Josh Brooks in second, Glenn Irwin taking third. Jason O'Halloran taking fourth. Again, what might have been for the season for Jason O'Halloran and Honda Racing. But just as Jason crossed the line, his rear tyre deflated.
Managed
to pull off the circuit, and he ended up crashing into turn one. He was obviously taken completely by surprise by that.
I'm beginning to wonder who in the Stuart Higgs office is writing the scripts for these weekends, like some sort of EastEnders episode where they're starting to just pull out all the drama.
But if you were going to do that, it would be Leon, because it's Leon that's streaking away with everything, and Leon is building almost the perfect season. It's the other guys that are tripping up amongst themselves,
yeah,
that are allowing Leon to be, you know, majestic in his quest for his first BSB title.
Yeah, he's just a rising above the fray, isn't he?
It is, yeah. If you're out the front, you're not going to get caught up with anything, are you? And I think it was just the lines that that Jake and Taz took, because Pete was out the way. Just unfortunately, the lines that they took them across the small amount of oil that Pete had dropped.
If you're already on the side of the tyres, you're saying, like, you don't need much.
Exactly. Because they're all fighting for position into Brooklands. At one point, we thought it was just that Jake had lost the front and Taz went down out of sympathy. You know, sometimes when they take, what happens when you see a rider go down, it takes your eye and you follow them down. It almost looked like it was that. But as it appears, it was, by all accounts, it was Hickey's oil.
So with all that going on, that must have taken some sort of unpacking for them to go around to talk to all the riders, and trying to get all the viewpoints from Leon and from Bradley and from everyone else, and the penalty, because I'm sure there would have been a ton of discussion about that.
Well, not too much, because he dropped the two places. I think the Suzuki, the Hawk Racing team, the Bill Bay Suzuki, I think they felt pretty hard done by, because it was after that that Bradley had gear selection problems, and he basically completed the race in third gear. Brad finished the race in 14th place after that.
And was that on the side? So the gear lever's on the left hand side. Was that the side that he clouted?
Yeah, no, he got clouted on the right.
Okay, so it wasn't necessarily a direct
result.
It wasn't
a direct result of that. No, yeah. It could have been a result of the crash on the previous day.
Right.
So that the gear selector, gearbox, whatever happened, it wasn't a direct result of what Leon had done, because he only lost a couple of places, but it was later in the race that he started to drop back. So as we go through the results, Jason was fourth, Christian Iden a battle in fifth, which closed the gap again on Pete. This is what started to raise the temperature for that final showdown place. Pete Hickman went out with no score. Christian Iden then comes back with a fifth place, which closes the gap back to 11 points.
Fifth. Amazing,
fifth Christian
isn't it?
Iden.
I mean, it's not as if his collarbone healed with a couple of Tylenol overnight. Unbelievable.
No. Fifth place for Christian Iden. Tommy Bridewell in sixth. Gino Rea, season best, seventh. Luke Mossy again, eighth place. Andy Irwin, ninth. Richard Cooper, 10th. Dan Linfoot, 11th. Danny Buck in 12th. James Ellison down in 13th place, ahead of Bradley Ray and Mason Law taking the final point.
Decent result by Andy Irwin there in ninth.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And this is what I was saying when we spoke about him at places like Snetterton and Thruxton, getting the tow with Andy and working getting the tow with Glenn and working in tandem with each other. I was really, really keen to see where his true pace was. And I figured it was kind of late top 10, early teens, because of the depth of the strength in depth of the BSB field. And to bring a top 10 on a regular basis almost now for Andy Irwin is good for him. So previously I wasn't slating the guy in any way, shape or form. I just wanted to see his real potential. And it's good. It's good potential. He's ahead of Richard Cooper, Dan Linfoot. A weekend to forget for Danny Buchan. And the FS3 Kawasaki team just couldn't get it together this weekend to mount a true challenge for that sixth place. So by the end of race two, it was pretty much, Buchan was pretty much out of it at that point, barring a DNF for both Iden and Peter Hickman. Michael Laverty, again, unfortunately failed to finish. Peter Hickman failed to finish, as we know. Tom Neave slid out. He slid out at Brooklands. So, it again, another race of attrition, but when the top four were covered by 2.5 seconds, purely because we lost Jake Dixon and Taran McKenzie, those gaps would have been an awful lot tighter had those two guys finished the race. So, yeah, very, very dramatic end to the first race of the Sunday.
But a fascinating race to watch. With sounds like, sort of interest all the way through, which is just what you want from motorcycle racing.
Andrew, every class had it. Supersport, there were five guys fighting for the win. Stock 1000, it was dominated by Alex Olsen and Josh Elliott. But they were maybe, you know, sort of a second ahead of your Billy McConnells, your Keith Farmers, Joe Collier. The battles there, MotoStar, it just really promoted fantastic close racing. So tip of the hat to Stuart Higgs and his team for making that change to the national circuit. And I hope they use it again next year. The biggest fear for me for the Silverstone International Circuit is that it's such a long lap. It tends to highlight greater the haves and the have-nots.
Yeah, but I'm thinking they visit there. I'm just trying to think. Don't they visit there twice during the year? So maybe they could do.
No, but they will do next year, I think.
Yeah, and then maybe they could do sort of one each, one at the international, yeah, one at the national.
Which is, there's talk of them doing that with Donington as well. So right. It's missing out the loop on one event and just going straight down on the back straight and then the right and then left of the traditional Donington National Circuit, and then do a race there with the loop. Do the same thing at Silverstone when you do the national circuit and then the full circuit, which I would rather see than Brands Indy. I think that if one track was to disappear off the calendar, I would suggest it would be Brands Indy.
I have no argument with that.
Exactly that. You know, Knock Hill they'll always go to because it's a round in Scotland. No problem with that whatsoever. But for Brands Indy just sticks out as the one where it's just it's such a tight circuit for the subscriptions that they have, certainly in the support classes, Stock 1000, Stock 600, so early in the season, they're fully subscribed. If we went there later in the season, natural fall-off means that the races are less well-subscribed as time goes. Funding issues, injuries, things like that, the field naturally shrinks across the course of a season. But trying to get 46 Stock 1000 bikes around there, 42 Stock 600 bikes, 26 super bikes, there isn't an awful lot of room. There's not an awful lot of room for error. Whereas this circuit is only, I think, did I say it was 1.2 miles, something like that. I forget what the length of the circuit. 1.6. So 1.6 miles, it's not too bad, really.
And well, it's generating good racing.
Yeah, and I think that Donington will do the same, you know.
Yeah,
I think the Donington National Circuit will do the same. They only put the loop in to make it GP homologation, to make it 2.5, just over 2.5 miles. So yeah, take that out, and quite happy to see what'll happen there.
Okay, so race three.
Here we go. So race three, grid, standard practice, fastest lap times dictate the grid. Leon Haslam on pole position. Jason O'Halloran, Taron McKenzie, front row start. Glenn Irwin, Josh Brooks, Christian Iden, second row start. Jake Dixon, Michael Laverty, Richard Cooper.
So this is O'Halloran's pretty good chance for a possible podium here.
This is O'Halloran's best chance almost of the season. My notes are on the other page. I'll have a look. I'm sure he's had podiums this year, but I will have a look shortly. So that's the grid for the final race three. Drama before the start.
Someone's tyre exploded.
No. That would have been quite interesting, though, wouldn't it? No. On the outlap, after changing the engine from the first race of the day to the second race of the day, Peter Hickman had a fueling issue on the sighting lap. He tried it again on the warm-up lap, but then pulled straight into pit lane. He felt like it was fuel starvation, but as it turns out, it was the opposite. It was overfueling. So as he's winding the throttle back, it's a very jerky ride, and he pulled straight back into pit lane. They plugged the laptop in. The grid was forming up at this point. So, of course, Christian Iden's on the second row of the grid, 11 points behind Peter Hickman. Peter Hickman's starting in pit lane. And so this was just the biggest drama you could have for that final showdown place. I'm sure the guys get bonuses for making it into the showdown, written into their contract. If they don't, they need someone to rewrite their contract for them because of the coverage they get as the title fighters.
Yeah, for sure.
For their sponsors, it's worth an extra few quid of the team's coffers.
And it's one thing to throw that away through your own mistake by going down or a crash or something like that, but you know, to sat there be helpless, you know, because your bike won't run.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's not like he dropped it or anything like that. Peter, you know, he'd done his best all weekend. So the race started. Pete fired off down pit lane afterwards, and he was obviously quite a distance back. So the crowd were cheering, you know, it's cheering the underdog. Christian Iden's up there. He's, you know, I'm sure he's even got crepitus in his shoulder. You can feel the bones rubbing together at that point because he'd not had an operation to plate them or anything. They were still loose. And so, you know, you've got Christian at one end of the field trying to, you know, battle for for more than 11 points than Pete. Pete's at the back to try and gain as many points as he can in case Christian doesn't get those points and he can, you know, cement his place in the showdown. But then at the start of lap two, Luke Mossy highsides out of Cops and rings his bell big time, and the race gets red flagged because Luke's obviously he's sort of prostrate in the track. Mm-hmm. Not unconscious, but the wind taken out of him.
Yeah, obviously no track staff can get to him.
Exactly, because it is quite a distance, again, from Cops to get onto the track. So immediate red flag, thankfully for Hickey. So Pete Hickman's like, my God, somebody's shining a light on me. Christian Iden's like, for God's sake, another start. Because it's within three laps, it's a full race restart.
So he gets to reform on the grid, obviously, yeah.
So he reforms on the grid, but I think he formed at the back of the grid because he didn't take the original start.
Right.
I stand to be corrected on that. I didn't see where he was at that point. So I forgive me. I can't remember if he started on his grid slot on the back of the grid. For me, I'm pretty sure he started at the back of the grid because he didn't take the start the first time round. During the restart, they had 5 or 10 minutes. The frantic activity in that Smith BMW pit was incredible to watch. They had the fuel tank off. I can't remember if they changed the tank or it could have been a kinked pipe. It could have, you know, when you're changing an engine, all sorts of things can happen. So there could have been a kinked fuel pipe, maybe one of the fuses not connected right, whatever it was. Daz Jones, Luke Brown, all of Hickey's crew, to watch them in action, it was all hands to the pump. But at one point, somebody said something and they all cracked out laughing. The amount of stress that those guys were under to then have the ability to laugh and, you know, but still be focused on what they do to take some of the pressure off was really, really cool to see. You know, you could see in Daz's eyes that it was like, oh God, here we go. Come on, guys, let's get this done. And they did it and they got the bike back out. But to actually see them laugh about it and not have the intensity that some have, they were working intensively,
mm-hmm.
but having the chance to laugh about it as well really helped Pete, I think. There didn't seem to be any stress in the garage at all. They were all working diligently. Everybody had a job to do and they did it. And they got Pete back out and the race then got back underway. It's just really impressive to see. That's something that you don't get to see, obviously, on while you're at the circuit. It's just great to catch it on the TV screens when you're back at home and you can just take a little bit more of a keen interest to what's going on. And as we said about Jason O'Halloran, of what might have been for this season, he got the whole shot for the restart and led the field away. Really, I don't know what's going to happen with Jason for next season, whether he stays with Honda or whether he rolls the dice for a change to a different team. But I think with the glimpses he's shown this season, Jason O'Halloran really could be one for the showdown higher places next season if he can just string that season together and avoid injuries and sort of avoid deputising for World Superbikes at any point, because that really did put the dampener on his season. Josh Brooks then took over the lead, but as the race went on, he struggled then with tyre wear, as a lot of people did. McKenzie then and Haslam were battling for the lead as the race came to its closure. McKenzie, you know when somebody's trying, when you can see their knees not vibrating, but you know, as Leon,
like twitching, you mean?
Yeah, Leon Haslam used to do it when he went down the gears. His knees would flap.
Yeah.
And as Taz was coming out of the second part of Luffield to get into Woodcote, his knees were flapping against the tanks. You know how much he was trying to wring the neck of that McCam Yamaha R1 just to try and get the drive to try and beat Leon to the line, as we've seen with Lowe's and Shaky over the years. It's just really trying to pull it tighter to get to the line first. A 0.075 second gap over the line, Leon just edged him out by literally a hair's breadth, with Jake Dixon coming home in third place, just 0.2 behind Leon, Glenn Irwin 0.8 behind. Fantastic finish to the regular season. And, well, Tyrone McKenzie won't ever be as close to not winning a race again, I don't think. But it certainly stamped his authority on the series and his arrival as a British superbike rider.
For sure. I mean, two podium finishes in a weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. And it could have been, from where he was in the race in the first race or something, in the second superbike race of the weekend, I think he crashed out of fifth place and he wasn't going to challenge for the podium at that point, I don't think. That was down to Leon, Josh and Jake Dixon at that point. So, you know, to come out with two podiums and to beat his teammate twice, who faded to sixth at the end of the race, that was something just a little bit special. But the drama behind that was unfolding between Iden and Hickman, that was the story of the race at the front. But Iden, the effects of his collarbone were starting to show and he was dropping back and back and back. Pete had made ground through the race and they were coming back together slowly but surely. Iden dropping, I'm sure, through the pain of his injuries, but then with Pete making the ground, but then so two-thirds through the race, Pete's looking down and looking behind him and we're like, what's going on? And his lap time suddenly dropped. His bike ended up being stuck in third gear.
Oh, no.
You know, for the closing laps of the race, his gear selector broke and he couldn't get out of third gear. So he was looking behind him, Sylvain Barrier passed him, Tom Neave passed him, Martin Jessop, Fraser Rogers. You know, you think, well, he's out of the points now. But then looking to where Christian Eden was, Christian Eden needed 12 points, which I think meant he needed to finish fifth if Hickey was out of the points. I'm trying to work 25, 20, 16, 13. Yeah, I'm sure it was something. He had to finish fifth to take that last podium, that last showdown spot. And it just didn't work out for Iden. It's such a shame. The drama is like, well, where's Iden? Where's he finishing?
Yeah, okay, yeah.
And Hickey's losing ground. And in the end, the the showdown didn't really change across the course of the weekend, but circumstances dictated that, man, they certainly tried to make it happen. But an absolutely fantastic weekend of racing. And yeah, I can't wait for them to go back to the national circuit at all. It'd be something very, very special. And, you know, if the guys haven't seen it, especially the guys in the States, it comes on. Is it still on Velocity in the States? I think it might be. They usually get shown a week or two later. If you get a chance to watch it, really, it's British Superbikes at its best. The onboards on YouTube, on the British Superbike YouTube channel, they don't show them on a race weekend, but they do put a highlights package together on YouTube of the onboards, which show the story of the race. And, you know, in full HD, they are absolutely fantastic from Silverstone. So it was the showdown was confirmed. Leon Haslam, as the points change, top six, 500 points, plus their podium points. Leon Haslam, 568 points, courtesy of 12 wins, 2 second places and 2 third places. Jake Dixon, 523, 1 win, 4 seconds and 6 thirds. Josh Brooks, 519. Brad Ray, 519. Glenn Irwin, 516. Peter Hickman, 504, courtesy of his second and third places at Thruxton two or three rounds ago. So, yeah, five manufacturers in the showdown. Peter Hickman, for the second season on the trot, being the only BMW in there ahead of the factory Tyco BMWs once again. Josh Brooks, he's been in the showdown every year since its inception, apart from 2016 when he was in World Superbikes. And we have on the cards, because unfortunately with the injuries to Shane Byrne, whatever happens, I think this year, we're going to have a first-time winner. Because I don't think Josh Brooks is going to do it. It's either going to be Leon Haslam or Jake Dixon. I think Brooks is too far behind to make too much of a difference with seven rounds remaining, seven races left, two at Alton Park, two at Assen, and then a triple header at Brands Hatch. The 45-point gap that Leon holds over Jake Dixon is the biggest ever points gap in the showdown era that started in 2010. I think the previous biggest was something like 27 points that Shaky held over Josh Brooks. So, and Josh Brooks, he's 49 points behind. It's difficult to see anywhere else than Leon Haslam. He's riding the best I've seen him ride. He's staying injury free. The bike is immaculate. And he's thinking smart, he's working hard, he's putting together almost the perfect championship season, touch wood, so far. I don't want to put any mockers on him for Alton Park and Assen. I think he's won 8 out of the last 11 races at Alton Park and 3 of the last 4 at Assen. So, you know, going into the showdown round, minus Brands Hatch, which was obviously the most difficult round of the year for him last season, he really is in charge going into the showdown round. And if things conspire to his benefit, then it's not mathematically impossible for Leon to wrap it up at Assen. The gap is that big. He could wrap it up at Assen. He needs to be 75 points ahead of his nearest rival at that point because of the 3 rounds at Brands Hatch. But it's not unfeasible that Leon Haslam could actually wrap the title up at Assen, which would be unprecedented.
Yeah, and in some respects, it wouldn't surprise me. I think he's been, out of that top six, probably the only consistent top finisher. All the other ones, I mean, if you look at their path to the showdown, they've had good weekends and they've had terrible weekends. But Leon and, you know, the JG Speedfit Kawasaki have just been able to put together such a consistent run, as you talked about, you know, the last time we spoke. I think
when you look at Leon's progress through the season, it's absolutely the model of consistency. I mean, to be fair, Jake Dixon and Josh Brooks on any other day have put together a fairly reasonable, maybe not Josh Brooks, there's a couple of single digit finishes there. But as far as Jake Dixon goes, apart from his start to the season, which the four races through Donington and Brands Indy, where he only came out with 19 points, the damage was already done because Leon had scored 7, 20, 13 and 25 in those four races. obviously Brad Rae run the opening two rounds of the season, but hasn't managed to put anything together much since, until we got to Cadwell when he got the 2 second places. So the podium shows, I mean, you go down to Jason O'Halloran, he's had a second and a third. Shane Byrne had a win, a second and a third. So he was on 9 podium credits anyway. And in the regular season, he's finished, I can't count quickly down there, it's sort of about 10th place there or thereabouts. I just didn't want to do it out loud because they don't number where they are. So yeah, the model of consistency, only finishing out of the top three on 3 occasions all season for Leon Haslam. It's incredible. That was the first race at Donington. And then he had a fourth place in the second race at Thruxton. Other than that, it's 25s, 20s and 16s all the way through.
Yeah, it's been a pretty masterful display by the rider and by the team.
Absolutely it has. Yeah, 5 wins on the bounce now. Who's to say it's not going to be 7 by sort of 10 past 5 on Sunday afternoon?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad now that we've got the top 6 settled for the showdown. They can go forward now to compete at Alton. Like I say, I think we know, you know, Leon's more than likely got that settled. But still, the remaining riders, like we were talking about last time, there is the fight for the rider's mug.
Yeah, the 7th place finish, the best of the rest.
The best of the rest. So that'll be interesting to watch. Dave, thanks very much for taking the time to fill me in. I'm going to hopefully get some time this week to go back and watch some of those races, because they really sounded not just good racing, but good drama.
Absolutely.
Well.
And enjoy it. It's good racing. Just from a neutral perspective, it's really good racing to watch.
And for you, will you be watching the Alton races from the comfort of your home?
Nope, from the comfort of the OMG Racing Garage, probably.
See if you can get you another pillion lap.
No, not around Alton Park, thanks. I don't mind Silverstone, it's nice and wide. And
maybe we can get you going over the mountain at Cadwell.
Oh, No, not on a pillion. No, we'll be out there. It's our final round of the season, so we're going over Saturday and Sunday. So, yeah, quite looking forward to that. The bittersweet, because it's our final round. We're not going to make Brands Hatch, so
right.
Hopefully we'll go out on a high, and yet again there'll be some more fantastic racing.
Yeah, I'm hoping there's some decent weather. I don't know. I haven't had a look ahead to see what weather is likely forecast.
I daren't look. And I'm not looking. I'm going to look on Friday. Give them 24 hours. It's a bit more accurate. And if any of our listeners are in the path of Florence, guys, I hope you stay safe out there. It's looking like a strong one that's coming in on the American East Coast.
Agreed.
It's certainly not going to be anything like that for us.
Dave, thanks again for your time. Thanks everyone for sticking with us and listening to the show. If you want to give us an email, you can. It's motorpod@motorpodcast.com. We're on the Facebook, facebook.com/motorpod. Always like to hear from you any thoughts or opinions you had on the Silverstone weekend, or any predictions for the upcoming Alton round. Be great to hear. We're also on the Twitter @moto_pod, and you can always get in touch with Dave directly on Twitter at
Dave Neal.
Fantastic. Dave, have a good rest of the week. Enjoy the racing over the weekend, and hopefully we can get together next weekend to catch up with Alton.
Sure will. Thank you, everybody, and enjoy the rest of the week.